Hey, good morning. Happy Canada Day. It's Jays Talk Plus. It's Blake Murphy and Julia Kreutz. If you are looking for hockey free agency coverage, that is over on the main Sportsnet 590 feed. It'll also be with you 11 to 1, the Fan Hockey Show, 1 to 3, Kipper and Bourne. It is, of course, the beginning of NHL free agency. It was a very quiet beginning of NBA free agency yesterday, which was nice for me. I like the chaos of NBA free agency, but it meant I got to just sit down and watch a terrific Blue Jays game.
Yes.
Watch an awesome Max Scherzer outing. Julia, this has not gotten thrown around a lot in the last couple of years, because even when the Blue Jays have been good, there's been a waiting for the other shoe to drop, or when you have big moments. I mentioned the 2023 series in August against the Texas Rangers. That was supposed to be a big one for wildcard seeding and things like that. It hasn't always delivered to the moment. Yesterday felt like a playoff game on June 30th.
Yeah, I have to say, the term statement win really hit differently yesterday for me, and it hits differently whenever a team can do it while also showing so many of the foundational points that it's been basically touting all season and beyond, right? I think that the Blue Jays' identity was so clearly on display in this win against the Yankees. And so it's not just that they won a series opener to make up some ground in the American League East. It is also that they did every single little thing that John Schneider, Ross Atkins have been talking about, the players as well. There was good base running, tremendous defense, taking the extra base, passing the baton, take your walk, don't strike out, right? Every single thing that we've been hearing from this team that is important to them was on display there. And I was like, well, this is the purest form of a statement win. That's kind of how I looked at that game.
Yeah, and that was very, very much on display on the hitter side in the fifth and sixth inning. The sixth inning, of course, a big one where the bottom of the lineup more than did their job, rolled it over, and then in part because George Springer once again got catcher's interference, the baton eventually got passed enough times, started with David Schneider and went all the way through back to Vladimir Guerrero Jr. for a big two-run single at like 250 miles an hour off the bat or whatever it was. So, yeah, that's kind of what it's supposed to look like. Yeah, you still need your big guys to come through. Springer's got to get on base in that situation. Vlad's got to bring the runners home. But when you go David Schneider double, Miles Straw infield single, Nathan Lucas pinch hit single, good base running on a wild pitch, good base running from Miles Straw on the Lucas single, Ernie Clement, who was in the one spot, but generally, for the most part, has been a bottom-of-the-order hitter. He was in the one spot because Bo Bichette was a late scratch. He singles and kind of passes it along. And then, yeah, you need all of those guys to contribute. You also need your big guys like Vlad to come through, and he did that with three RBI in this game, including two there. Yeah, you get a little bit of a favor, the left side of the Yankees infield. Not the greatest day that Jazz Chisholm and Anthony Volpe have ever had decision-making-wise and 50-50 play-wise. But, yeah, you got to take advantage of that stuff. And they did. Even the run they scored in the fifth inning was an Ernie Clement single, advance on a ground ball, advance on a blocked pitch, and then score on a ground ball. Like, that's not small ball in that they didn't bunt or steal a base, but it's, you know, get the leadoff runner on and just find a way to get into scoring position for Vladimir Guerrero Jr.
Yeah.
A lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun. And you're right in that, you know, part of the foundational points that I'm talking about is Vladimir Guerrero Jr. coming through with the bases loaded. I think it was one out at that point in the game. And we've spoken about power a lot, Blake. I still think that there is room to add here. The Blue Jays do need maybe one more bat that can come through with power in those big moments. But Vladdy is at his best when he's doing what he did yesterday, right? He doesn't need the launch angle. He doesn't need to pull a grand slam or whatever it is. He is strong enough to make contact on the ground and still get the job done. And really, what a moment. That was definitely the biggest moment in the game. Mm-hmm. It was so fitting that it was Vladimir Guerrero Jr. in that moment against the Yankees again, right? There was just so much to like, and that is Vladdy at his best.
Yeah, with the power, let's not throw the baby out with the bathwater there. The big home run to start the game against the Red Sox on Sunday, also really cool, also really big. And you see quickly how much, you know, if there is something on the position player side that you are still looking for, it's, well, the Yankees got ahead early on a home run. Max Scherzer has this incredible 10-pitch battle with Aaron Judge, and we'll come back to Scherzer in a little bit, and then Jazz Chisholm puts him up to the next pitch. And then you get the lead and Cody Bellinger goes yards such that then you have to start getting into, well, do you have to intentionally walk Aaron Judge with the bases empty? So the power changes things quick, but yeah, you didn't need all of it in this case. Yeah. Only two extra base hits, the doubles for Vladimir Guerrero Jr. And David Schneider, but a lot of good plate appearances, a lot of good battles, 14 base runners overall. I almost forgot the hit by a pitch for David Schneider there as well. It was nice to see him have two drop in, given the quality of plate appearance lately that haven't necessarily resulted in results for him.
It's funny because Carlos Rodon was dealing. I don't think that anyone is going to disagree with that. He looked very, very good. And one of the guys on the Blue Jays that had consistently good plate appearances against him was Davis Schneider. We've spoken a bit about the pulled foul balls that are very loud. And, you know, if he had timed it just a little bit better, there were a couple of those in there. And so to see him actually get rewarded, get that double, start things up in that sixth inning, huge for him. And it really does point to the things that he is working on and maybe a different mentality, a different really mental makeup from the guy that we saw earlier this season. Davis Schneider is doing his job. It's just tough when you don't get consistent plate appearances to actually see results consistently.
Well, that's where it gets tough. There was a game last week where he drew a really important walk as part of a rally. I forget which day it was exactly, but he drew a really important walk that was part of a rally. He had a strikeout where he got hosed on a really bad strike three call, and you can see the quality of plate appearance since he's come up. I mean, his on-base percentage has been consistently strong when he comes up. It's just nobody really cares that much about your on-base percentage if you're hitting below 200 and the power hasn't been there. So a day like that where you can have a single and a double and a hit by a pitch, find three different ways to get on base. And yes, he got caught stealing, but watching that back, that was almost definitely a botched hit and run. So it's hard to put too much of that. Like, I don't think you're very rarely sending David Schneider on a straight steal. So probably a botch hit and run there. So this is a very fun game. Playoff atmosphere down at the Dome. The kind of game where I come in just very excited to do the show. And a big part of that was the intensity that Max Scherzer brought to the game. I mentioned the 10-pitch battle with Aaron Judge. And the two battles he had with Aaron Judge are like, this is it. This is why you do it. Max Scherzer against Aaron Judge, like two absolutely going into the Hall of Fame, one at age 40, you know, seeing if he has 1 year left, and one having maybe the greatest 365 days we've seen a hitter have since Barry Bonds. And they have these two batters, and the first time around, Scherzer freezes them with two pitches low in the zone, but freezes them for a strikeout looking. Then they have this 10-pitch battle. And Scherzer starts the first four pitches are four different pitches. Right. He's showing him a little bit of everything. Then Aaron Judge gets a second look at a cutter and he goes down to a knee, fouling it off. And then later in the plate appearance, he hits one to the 500 level, just foul, and then gets frozen looking on what I think was a fastball low and away to end the plate appearance on the 10th pitch of that at bat. Those two strikeouts were just, man, it's so cool to see two guys at that level do it, and it's so cool that they both played out in that kind of battle, and that Max Scherzer won both.
Yes, 100%. And I agree with you in that those are the moments that make us excited to come to work the next day. I was pretty annoying to Maxina last night, I want to say, because I was just, you know, it was just like a lot of oohs and ahs and oh my God, and I can't believe this, and I'm so excited to talk about this game tomorrow. And Max Scherzer is such a big part of that, right?
John and Maxine Schneider doesn't care at all.
Not at all. She was watching Love Island.
Have you started calling her Mad Maxine yet?
Oh my God. No, but I definitely will. She will not understand the
divorce
reference. But yeah, she was just watching Love Island, right? Mm. And we were equally tense, I'll tell you that much.
Do you not watch Love Island with her?
I don't.
Oh, okay. I would have pegged you as a Love Island person. I don't know anything about it, but like two weekends in a row I've been out with friends and that's all anyone's talking about, and I'm trying to understand. I'm not a reality TV guy at all. I would have thought that was something you guys did together.
When she has it on in the background, I will passively watch with her. It was the same for Ultimatum, the new season that just came out. Anyway, the reality show that I really need is the reality show that is my work, I guess.
Yeah.
It's this Blue Jays team. But yeah, and it started with Max Scherzer yesterday. You could feel the intensity. John Schneider describing him as an adrenaline junkie. You can see why, right? This is a guy who, if he stays healthy, if the thumb wakes up okay and all of those things, he still has it. He's ready to go, and he lives for these moments. I know that he said post-game that, you know, the matchup does not really dictate a ton of the intensity. He is always going to be intense, but You could see it. I mean, you could see it a little bit.
Maybe, but like he was also pretty intense against Cleveland. I think his point was not that it's not that he doesn't get up for the Yankees. It's that he also gets up for teams like Cleveland because he is pretty maniacal with the competitive. But yeah, he said the opponent is not going to all of the sudden make the thumb hurt worse. I go into every single start as intense as possible within reason. I'm not out there crazy, but I'm intense every single time out. Keegan Matheson, our pal at MLB.com, had a great piece. He watched Max Scherzer's warmups yesterday really intensely, and Scherzer's caught like finger gunning when there's a strike, moving his hand the way he wants, trying to like will the pitches to move and stuff like that. And I've gotten to, you know, so when Max Scherzer was ramping back up and throwing his bullpens, he throws it in the Blue Jays bullpen down the left field line where it's, because of the renovations, it's open. So you could sit in the media room and have like a looking down eye view at Max Scherzer doing like a ramp back up bullpen. And even those 20 pitch ones were intense.
It was. Everything is intense. And it's funny to see him post game because he's kind of soft spoken and he's kind of just a normal dude when he's not on the mound. But there is something very much that just kicks in. And maybe it is that adrenaline rush. Maybe it is that chase for something, for that type of feeling of dominance, of retiring the best hitters in the game. It was something else. It was really cool to watch. I hadn't really, I watched one or two, I believe one Max Scherzer start in the playoffs when I was covering the ALCS when the Rangers won the World Series. And that I missed it. You know, there was a nostalgic feeling of like, oh yeah, I've seen this before. And you don't necessarily get it very often because obviously every pitcher is different. Every pitcher has a different personality and a different approach to how they are going to be on the mound in order to be their most effective. And so, yeah, it was something else. And if this was game one of this series, I can only imagine where we're going from here, Blake.
So, yeah, and to end the Scherzer side of this, so after that 10-pitch at-bat against Aaron Judge, he hangs a slider to Jazz Chisholm. It barely moves at all. Jazz Chisholm takes it for a two-run home run. Those are the only runs that Max Scherzer gives up over his five innings. He strikes out seven, gets eight swing and miss. Really good called strike and swing and miss rate. I've referenced that before. You know, if you're up around 34 or 35% of pitches are called or swinging strikes, your stuff's doing pretty well. Mm-hmm. The opponent is having a little bit of time picking you up. So all that was good. The velocity was good. It was down a tiny bit in the fifth inning, but we would kind of expect that with where he's at. And then before the final batter of the fifth inning, he calls the training staff out and you could see him working through his hand a little bit. And he stays in, he gets the final out, but then the cameras show him in the dugout and he's kind of like that's all I got for today. So his day ends at five innings at 71 pitches. We'll see how he feels today. No one was willing to say anything definitive about it yesterday after the game. It's just kind of, you expect some fatigue in the thumb. We had heard when he was first having the issues around the 50 pitch mark is where it would flare up. This time he got to 70 before he got there. He had thrown a little bit more than that his last time out. So something to monitor today. I'm sure we'll hear from John Schneider pregame about where Max Scherzer's thumb is at today. I will say this. If you are going to have to monitor his innings and pitches closely, and you're only going to get five innings out of Max Scherzer every fifth day, sign me up. Those are the five innings you're getting every single time. Oh, like, yeah. I'm not worried about, oh, he's not going seven. That is plenty Max Scherzer for me. That was really good. If they can manage this where even if he's at five innings, 75 pitches for a little while here, more than fine with that.
Me too. And not only because this is still the best spot the Blue Jays rotation has been all season, just in terms of having five available arms that can actually give you starters workloads, but also because that was just really good. And I don't think it was really a question of does Max Scherzer still have it. We saw it in spring training. He had it. We saw flashes of it in Cleveland, even though he said that he was rusty, kind of needed to work on some things command-wise and things like that. But that was on display at times as well. And then yesterday, it was just pure dominance, which is why, I don't know. I don't know if it had been the athletics in that same position, Blake, if we would have seen a Max Scherzer that much in control. I would have to ask him. I would have to ask the people around him. But it did feel, and maybe this is just us projecting a little bit, but it did feel like this was just, there was a little more dominance, there was a little more impetus because obviously it's such an important game.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to let you take the disagree with Max Scherzer publicly and how he felt one. I'm going to agree with Mr. Scherzer.
I don't know.
You know, I'll disagree with Chris Bassett the odd time. I am not going to disagree with Max Scherzer about what Max Scherzer says about his pitches and his intensity. Okay, we have a lot of smaller notes to get through from this game. There was a lot of stuff going on. Bullpen, pretty good. Braden Fisher, I've mentioned it a couple times. Officially, in he's a dude status to me. He's in there. Like I am, the trust level is not. I mean, I'm not saying he's like in the eighth inning mix. But certainly when you're looking at guys like Chad Green and Mason Fluharty and even Nick Sandlin at that point, Braden Fisher, I am okay with him in a big spot. He walked one batter there, but struck out the side. Yeah. Otherwise, continues to look really good.
And it was the most emotion I have ever seen from Braden Fisher on
the mound. Yeah, the nicest guy on the team.
The nicest guy on the team, always smiling, very, very sweet. And then that was the moment. But listen, again, you want your guys to show up a little bit more in those moments. That mattered. There was so much on the line at that point, and he pitched extremely well, Blake. I know that you kind of look at the fastball. He doesn't throw the fastball a ton, which is okay. We've spoken about this. The curveball and slider are so good and so dominant, and he can really place those two pitches anywhere.
Yeah, he basically didn't throw the fastball yesterday.
Yeah, and when he didn't throw it for strikes, right? It's funny to think of a 97, 98 mile per hour fastball as your show me pitch, but it was kind of that to just set up the breaking balls again. I don't know. I still think that there may be a way to get a little more out of that fastball, but as long as the breaking balls are working as well as they are, and they are, they look so good, then you can mix in a fastball here and then just to give guys a different look and then go right back to that curveball in the dirt because you know they're going to chase it.
Yeah, and look, yesterday it honestly just seemed like he had a better feel for locating the curveball on the slider. Like the two fastballs he threw, Ascara and the walk, were not even close.
Yeah, way high.
We also saw that after there was the game on Sunday where he seemed to like tweak his leg a little bit planting on the mound at one point. When he came back in, he was mislocating his fastballs high in that one as well. So maybe there's a little something with just the touch on his fastball right now. But if you go back and look at where he threw a lot of those sliders and curveballs in the three strikeouts as well, they are like a couple of sliders like pinpoint on the edge where they would have been called strikes, and then a couple of curveballs that are they're chase, but they're not that far off. So you kind of, if you're Jason Dominguez and you got two strikes, you kind of got to offer at it. Continue to be really impressed with Braden Fisher. Jeff Hoffman finished the month of June, as much as we talked about it, 6-for-7 in save chances with a 180 ERA and 4.5 strikeouts per walk.
Yeah.
We talked about it a lot. That one blow up looked particularly bad, especially when we started to look under the hood and there were a couple of like pale yellow flags. I think we can put a pin in it for now.
We're good. Yeah. We're good. I said it yesterday. I'll say it again today. I was wrong. I think it was a bit of an overreaction, maybe looking at things too narrowly instead of looking at the whole. And he's still the guy. He's so in control. And listen, him and Brendan Little as well. The one thing that I had in mind for those two guys was Braden Fisher as well, to a certain extent, but it was a little more tense for Little and for Hoffman in my mind. The mental fortitude that is required to stay focused and execute your pitches with the game on the line, with 40,000 plus people yelling, the roof closed, which does make a difference in terms of noise and distractions and things like that. That to me was just the biggest win for these guys, because we've seen Brendan Little look a little frustrated at points with command. No problem there. We've seen Jeff Hoffman not, you know, maybe struggle a bit with command, with velocity, with things like that. No problem there. And the most important thing is that they stayed focused. They executed. And that bodes well for now, probably bodes well for October as well.
Yeah, we'll see. Brendan Little is going to have to come back in the zone a little bit more frequently, even if it's just for pitch efficiency. And if, ironically, the one pitch he did throw that caught some zone was the one Giancarlo Stanton poked at 110 miles an hour for a single. So I don't know. We'll see with Brendan. I do think, look, there was a lot of chase in that, and the knuckle curve's so nasty that he's going to get a lot of chase. I do wonder if, as teams see him again, if we're going to hit that point at some point where teams dare him into the zone a little bit, and you're willing to get behind 0-1, 0-2 if it means trying to bring him in the zone a little bit. Like Jason Dominguez's plate appearance, none of the pitches were remotely close to the the strike zone, and he's just whiffing away at them, which, again, I get it. I know the knuckle curve's nasty. The sinker's pretty good, but at some point, someone's going to be like, come
you
in the zone.
To. Yeah, and he did a little bit, right, in his last outing. I think it was in Boston, and maybe the game plan was a little different here because the Yankees chase, right? They chase. They strike out. It's a thing. So, yeah, but I think you're right, and I think that is something to monitor. To the extent that, well, if you're facing a team that doesn't chase as much as the Yankees, then how do you adjust to that in order to still be effective in those moments? And if that means going to the sinker a little bit more, so be it.
Yeah. So we'll see how that plays out. The other bullpen thing was, so I have talked about on here that, and we get it in text on questions and stuff, that I'm never comfortable with the bullpen. There is no bullpen you could have where I would not be asking for more bullpen guys. And the fact that, I don't mean to pick on them, but Mason Fluardi and Chad Green are pitching in a very tight game in the eighth inning against the meat of the Yankees order. If that's not an example of what I was talking about, that, like, yeah, look, Jimmy Garcia might be activated tonight. That helps. That solves one of those spots. But, you know, you're going to have a couple of these guys down tonight. It's maybe Nick Sandlin in that spot instead. It gets... When you're playing a lot of close games against good teams, it gets highlighted pretty quickly that you got to be comfortable with everyone in some kind of leverage. And I know Chad Green got out of it last night, but with Chad Green and Mason Fluardi, I'm not at a spot where I trust those guys in those big spots. I know Chad Green got away with it last night, but Miles Straw kind of two really good catches. Miles Straw should get credited with the hold in that one.
Seriously, just two running catches there to bail out Chad Green, who continues to, unfortunately, surrender some hard contact, some outs on the warning track, even when he's not surrendering the home runs. Cody Bellinger's home run against Mason Fluharty was kind of heartbreaking because for a couple times now, you know, you kind of expect Fluharty to turn a corner and then this happens. And it must be so frustrating for the pitcher as well.
Do we expect him to turn? Like I was saying yesterday, like I think he's the next guy to go down.
Yeah.
Like when Jimmy Garcia's back. His ERA is up over 9 over the last, like, it's almost 2 months now. Of that, like the hot start was cool, and he's like a nice guy. I think he'll figure it out eventually, but like we're like a 9 ERA over almost 2 months is tough. And that was, you know, he got hosed on the 1-0 call that he should have been up in that count, but otherwise, like, that's a sweeper in a good spot for a power hitting lefty.
Yeah, there were a lot of high sweepers from him, which is, I don't know if you've seen a ton of that, but it did seem like maybe that wasn't exactly how that pitch was supposed to move, which maybe is more concerning than, you know, just getting beat with your best pitch. But yeah, we'll see. I mean, there's a legitimate possibility that Mason Fluharty is going to get sent down. I expect to see him back. This may very well be one of those rookie seasons where a guy just bounces around a little bit.
It happens.
It does happen. It's just, the way that things went in Boston, and it looks like he was right there, and then he wasn't. And then he comes in here, and that's what happens. It's just, it's tough. It's frustrating.
Well, and someone's got to go down if Jimmy Garcia gets activated today. And we don't know 100% that he is, but he was in Toronto yesterday. He had pitched the three. He did a Florida Coast League, a Dunedin, and a Buffalo all last week.
Right.
So unless they decide he needs one more, and they could use fresh arms. They used a lot of bullpen arms the last two games. So, you know, someone's got to go down. And that's life as an optionable reliever. Okay, we got a couple quick hitters before we take a break. Jerron Watts Brown of the New Hampshire Fisher Cats is going to join us in the second segment. Bo Bichette, if you were wondering why he wasn't in the lineup, right knee discomfort. He was a late scratch. He stepped on a ball while going into the hole during infield practice before the game. He wasn't sent for imaging or anything like that yet. So day to day, it sounds like. That's how rookie of the year happened, by the way. Guy steps on a ball in the outfield and. So maybe Bo Bichette's a leverage arm out of the bullpen from here. George Springer came out of the game after the sixth inning. So he tried to go first to third on Vlad's two-run single. Connected kind of throat on Jazz Chisholm's knee. And I guess was having some trouble breathing. He's day-to-day. Nobody sounded very concerned about that.
Yeah, that
after
was
the game.
It looked scarier than it actually was, but it looked pretty scary, Blake.
Yeah, well, and my head immediately goes to like a head-related injury, which then you're down a guy for 7 days at least and things like that. And the Blue Jays already have two pretty notable injuries in the outfield in Dalton Varsho and Anthony Santander. There was also an update from Buck Martinez.
Right.
So we knew this heading in the show, but it wasn't our place to say it yesterday on the air. But Buck Martinez will not be, he was expected to return to the broadcast on Sportsnet for this series. He's going to take a little extra longer off. Now, Buck does 100 out of 162 games. So a lot of that time that he was off in June was anticipated. That's Buck taking vacation or managing the schedule and things like that. This is an unplanned one. And Buck said yesterday during the broadcast, "Hey, Blue Jays fans, I was planning to be back in the booth tonight after some scheduled time off, but I recently had a little health setback. While I'm feeling pretty good, I'm going to take some extra time off out of an abundance of caution. I hope to see you at the ballpark soon. As always, thanks for all your love and support." So if you were wondering where Buck's been lately, if you're wondering why Buck wasn't back yesterday when we anticipated him back yesterday, that's why. Obviously, our best wishes to Buck to be feeling better quickly. Yeah. It's always fun at the Dome, but it's always a little more fun when Buck's around. He brings an energy and a spirit and obviously a voice to the team that we all really miss.
Yeah, one of the best to ever do it. We keep saying that we are spoiled to have Dan and Buck as our broadcasters, and we'll keep saying it as long as it's true, because that's very much the reality of it. We do wish Buck all the best, and we hope to see him again very soon. Just such an important part of this team and what we do here.
Yeah, and going to be in the level of excellence eventually, if not, you know, fairly soon, I would imagine. Okay, and he'll be coming back when he comes back to a fun playoff race. The Rays also lost yesterday. So the Blue Jays are now 2 games back of the Yankees in the division, and also only half a game back of the Rays for the top wild card spot. So pretty notable there. The Athletics coming through for us yesterday.
For once. There was also against the Yankees, but here we are.
There was also a Ross Atkins media availability prior to the game. Nothing too notable. A couple minor notes. They are not closing the door on the idea of Treya Savage joining Major League Baseball at some point this year, but the focus is on his development. They're going to do whatever is focused developmentally. Anthony Santander actually suffered a shoulder subluxation, so a partial dislocation of the shoulder when he banged into the wall. So the shoulder was not an explanation for his performance to that point, but obviously the shoulder was unmanageable from there. That explains the extended timeline here a little bit more. Still not swinging a bat. And then trade deadline related, Ross Atkins brought up that they have a bit of financial muscle to flex and they have ownership support to spend. Now, whether they actually do that or not, but he's put it out there now that the financial side, if you have to add on some salary, if you're talking about a Sandy Alcantara, maybe that's that, you know, they have the flexibility to add salary. They're pretty comfortable with the prospect capital they have in terms of putting that into a deal, especially, I think, on the position player side at the higher levels of the minors. They've got some depth there. Sounded like for now the focus will be on a right-handed bat and some pitching depth.
Yeah.
He was pretty vague about that, as you would expect. Was also talking about how the market hasn't really materialized yet. Don't know who the buyers and sellers are. Don't know who's available necessarily. But money to spend, comfortable with spending prospect capital to get it done. Right-handed bat, pitching depth. I think those are the things you look. You need to see it. You need to see the actual guys come in the door. But those are the things you. Those are the check the boxes you wanted to hear checked yesterday in terms of the team's trade deadline mentality here 30 days out.
Yeah, I was a little, I guess, well, maybe not surprised. It might not be the right word, but basically Atkins was asked where the focus was in terms of run creation or run prevention. And I would assume that pitching, it falls in the basket of run prevention.
Yes.
And that is the one that he sort of picked.
But he also said a right-handed bat.
He also did say a right-handed bat. Yeah, and the question was more like, do you see opportunities to add to run creation or run prevention? And he picked run prevention, which is funny because John Schneider a few months ago told Chad Vitti that actually they would benefit from some run creation additions.
Well, the offense has gotten way better, so that's part of it. You know, Addison Barger is, you know, stickier than maybe they anticipated. Ernie Clement's been better than maybe they anticipated offensively. But yeah, I think my honest answer is like, it's going to come down to what the market is going to 100%. Present to you. You know, if like, I don't know, if Rhys Hoskins is the Brewers are in the playoff race, so he's not even a good example. But, you know, if that's the type of right-handed bat that presented to you, and then Sandy Alcantara is the type of run prevention guy, I will say this, because people don't like the term run prevention, he did clarify he is not talking about defense.
Yep.
They're not going out to add another defense first guy. They're very, very comfortable being the best defense in baseball for the third year in a row. You don't have to worry about that. All right, let's take a break. I did want to talk about Aaron Judge getting intentionally walked twice, but I have a feeling it's going to come up again later in the series. So we got Jerron Watts-Brown of the New Hampshire Fisher Cats on the other side. Let's take a break. Let's go down to New Hampshire and talk to him. That's next as Jays Talk Plus continues with Blake Murphy and Julia Kreutz.
Big opinions and in-depth conversations covering the Leafs, Jays, Raptors, and the NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Jays Talk Plus. Blake Murphy and Julia Kreutz with you. Jerome Watts-Brown of the New Hampshire Fisher Cats is going to join us shortly here. Having a hell of a season.
Yeah.
A lot of him and Treya Savage being on the same rotation and getting, they got bumped up shortly after each other.
Yeah, there's so much to like about that Fisher Cats team right now. They went on a really fascinating run there. I think it was 40 scoreless innings, and we're going to ask Jerome about that as well because he was part of it. And yeah, I mean, there's just so much to like and to sort of follow along with the New Hampshire Fisher Cats right now. Honestly, the Blue Jays farm system as a whole, right? We've talked about this for a little bit, but not really a highly touted farm system, but it seems like even the national guys are starting to catch up to the fact that this is a bit of a better system than what it's made out to be.
Yeah, it's certainly there's been some helium to it. We'll go back to that term over the last 12 months or so. The draft people, you know, Baseball America and places like that were pretty fond of the draft that they had last year, pretty fond of the job they did at the trade deadline. And then guys like Jerome Watts-Brown, who was a 2023 pick, start to show, you know, what the team was thinking and looking for. And yeah, it's, certainly the farm system's in a better state than it was 18 months ago, reputation-wise, depth-wise, things like that. Especially you see it on the pitching side. And look, they've gone through a rash of pitching injuries. There are guys like Brandon Barriera and Ricky Tiedemann and Landon Moraitis who are just kind of starting the path back. But there are exciting pitching names at all levels of the minors for the first time in a little while here. Exciting pitching names at the major league level while we wait for Jerome. Yeah. It's going to be Kevin Gausman against Max Fried tonight. Right. What do you think of a 1.92 ERA here on July 1st? Do you think that's going to be a fun day at the ballpark?
I do think it's going to be a fun day at the ballpark, and I'll tell you why. Things went pretty okay, all things considered, against Carlos Rodon, and you and I were speaking about just how good of a 1-2 punch that truly is for the Yankees. Well, the Blue Jays held their own. They got his pitch count up there. They did what they were supposed to do, basically, and got to the bullpen after that. I don't see why they wouldn't be able to do the same thing here. Now, very different pitchers, of course, and Max Fried has had a tremendous season up to this point. It's been really, really fun and annoying to watch how good he's been. But I think it'll be a fun day at the ballpark just because, one, you have Kevin Gausman on the other side. That is going to be an extremely good matchup. It's going to be a fun one no matter how you slice it. And then, yeah, this is another opportunity to make another statement win, to get to an ace, to drive him out of the game a little bit early, and maybe tire out the Yankees bullpen for the rest of this series a little bit more. Everything has that cascading effect.
Alternatively, you got one yesterday against Rodon.
Yeah.
Maybe you lose the Fried game and you try to take the next two in the series.
That would also be a perfectly acceptable and expected outcome.
Look, you don't go into the game with that mentality. Well, as a player, I can. I could be realistic about what the four-game set looks like. I told Keith McPherson yesterday, we're not letting them have two.
No.
But we can let them have one. I'm not 100% sure we're going to get Jerome Watts-Brown after all. So let's take a longer look at this game. So Max Fried comes in with a 1.92 ERA in this one. He has 108 innings pitched already this year. So that's sixth in baseball in innings pitch. He's second in ERA among qualified pitchers, fifth in RWAR. We use RWAR, not FWAR, for wins above replacement for pitchers when we're talking about things that have happened, not projecting forward. So, by pretty much any way you cut it up, a top five to top 10 pitcher in baseball this year, 35% strikeout rate, the 5% walk rate, also a high ground ball rate. So just not a lot of ways to get it done. And Fried's been a little different this year than he's been in past years. He's always been very, very good, but there's a huge spike in his usage of his cutter. So that has made him even more effective against righties. Obviously, he's a lefty, so you wonder about platoon side things. Could a righty do a little better? He has only allowed two home runs to a right-handed hitter all season so far. He just kind of, we've seen it with Eric Lauer at times. We've seen it with Chris Bassett. Chris Bassett's a righty going against lefties, but that cutter up and in. Cutter up and in to try to neutralize some of the platoon stuff. Can you locate it well? Can you get kind of in at a guy's hands a little bit? Max Fried has done a really good job of that with the expanded cutter usage. The Yankees also changed his sinker grip. So now he's got a four-seamer, a sinker that's more effective, and this new cutter that he's using way more. So three different fastballs. Good luck. Good luck. The Jays have seen him, by the way, for 57 plate appearances before, and they're hitting 207 with a 237 slugging and zero home runs. Mm-hmm. So 57 plate appearances isn't...
That's a lot of plate appearances for zero home runs.
It is. That's a couple games worth of plate appearances. Vlad's 2-for-11 with a couple strikeouts. Bo's 2-for-8. Springer 2-for-7. There's a lot of guys 2-for-7, 2-for-6, 2-for-8, that kind of stuff. On the other side, Kevin Gausman has seen this Yankees team for 216 plate appearances.
Yeah.
It's a lot. And it's really funny to look at the individual line items because every Yankee has either owned Kevin Gausman or been absolutely overmatched against Kevin Gausman. There's no in between. Aaron Judge is 14-for-41 with 6 homers and 9 walks against Kevin Gausman. Now, Gausman, some good stats from Chris Black that'll probably make the broadcast a little bit later. But when Kevin Gausman has been able to locate to the edges with Aaron Judge, a little safer. Anything over the heart of the plate. And this is, I know baseball-wide, fans are like, well, Aaron Judge gets too many pitches down the middle of the plate. Like, why does people pitch in that way? Well, one, because pitching's hard. And two, that actually doesn't hold up to statistical analysis. Judge does not get an outlier amount of pitches over the heart. It's just anytime he does, he absolutely crushes it if you make a mistake. So Kevin Gausman obviously got to stick to the outside there. Giancarlo Stanton and Paul Goldschmidt, both pretty good numbers against Kevin Gausman career-wise as well. But Cody Bellinger, Anthony Volpe, Trent Grisham, DJ LeMahieu, all in the mud against Gausman. So I don't know. Is it like you mow guys down and then give up a solo home run here and there kind of day? I don't really know what to expect.
It might be, but I think it all starts with just asking ourselves, what is the version of Kevin Gausman that we're going to get today, right? Because clearly he turned a corner against Cleveland. That was a very, very good outing. Was it 8 scoreless innings for him?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and...
Best we've seen his fastball probably all year,
certainly.
Like in terms of locating and things
and
like that.
And velocity as well. And it was clear that the bit of extra rest that he got did him some good because everything was just so much more crisp than it had been throughout the month of June. But yeah, I think that's the first question that you need to ask. Is that going to show up again? Will he be able to touch 97 and locate on the edges and work from that, right? And actually get ahead in the count, which is so, so important for a guy like Gausman. Again, he has something playing for him, which is that the Yankees chase. If they don't know what is coming, and we've had that discussion with Gausman a little bit as well, if the Yankees don't know what's coming, they're probably going to swing and miss on that splitter that just disappears, right? And the splitter has looked good. That has not really been a point of concern in recent outings for Kevin Gausman. The fastball kind of took over there in terms of what pitch we're talking about and how we're talking about it and what we're maybe looking at with a little bit more attention. Right now, for me, it's the fastball because the splitter has been pretty consistent for a few starts now. Yeah, it's this would be the perfect time, Blake, for everything to click and to work together as it did against the Guardians however many days that was ago. Or 5 days ago.
Yeah, there that's, you go. Yeah.
So he's pitching on regular rest.
Regular, so that's notable with the velocity bump. The Jays didn't have an off day, to go through. Wait, did they have an off day on Thursday? I can't remember.
On Thursday?
Yeah, they probably did. I don't remember.
I think did have an off day on Thursday.
It all blends together. Anyway, it'll be interesting to watch where that velocity
is. Do you know when they had an off day? On Monday.
Okay.
Monday the 23rd was their last off
day.
So
it's regular rest for Kevin Gausman.
Yeah. Maybe I had an accidental off day on Thursday. Who knows? But we're here now. That's what matters.
Yeah. So it'd be fascinating to see how this one goes. What did you make of the 2 intentional walks for Aaron Judge? So Aaron Judge has not been intentionally walked as much as you might think for someone having the season that Aaron Judge is having. Yeah. James Wood got walked intentionally 4 times on Sunday for the Washington Nationals.
Were they playing the Angels?
Yeah.
The Angels love to intentionally walk guys. I think that Aaron Judge was also intentionally walked a ton when they played the Angels, which is, I don't know. I think it's pretty funny. What did you think?
I guess the thing is also if you have bad pitchers, you are a little... Like maybe you're a little more, obviously that's an extra base runner and things like that, but maybe you're a little more willing to. James Wood was the first player since Barry Bonds to be intentionally walked 4 times in one game.
Four more time.
Yes. Aaron Judge was walked once with a runner on first base and one out. Mm-hmm. So first base is not open, and you're putting a runner into scoring position to do that. And then once with the bases empty and nobody out. I thought both were fine. I know there was the... What was it? The Matt Chapman thing a couple years ago with John Schneider where
with
he
was Ohtani?
Yeah, with Ohtani, like make someone else beat you. And I feel that way about this Yankees team. I certainly understood, like, I don't think they intentionally walk Aaron Judge there if Cody Bellinger doesn't homer.
Right.
And then it's a one run game, it's a one swing game. You've got, you know, it's Mason Fluharty and Chad Green that you're working through that inning with. So I'm not testing Aaron Judge there. I'm not testing two guys with, you know, ERAs north of four to get it done against Aaron Judge in that spot. I'm perfectly fine with that one. The earlier one, I don't know. It's a little early in the game, maybe, and pushing a guy into scoring position. Like, given it was Rodon on the mound and the Yankees bullpen has stabilized a little bit, you know, if you give them one run there by way of pushing a guy into scoring position, you know, that could change the game. Right. Like in my head, this was going to be a lower scoring game. It's maybe different if it's like an 8-7 style game. But yeah, the first one I was a little like, huh, okay, they're really good pitch around. The one with the bases empty in a one run game, sure.
Yeah. Was it Brendan Little on the mound, or was it Fluharty first? And I'm very sorry that the details are murky here.
No, that's okay. The first one was with Little on the mound. So Dominguez had singled. Yeah, he gets Bellinger out, and then he wants Jazz Chisholm.
Right.
And that part was fine, but it did come back because Giancarlo Stanton singled him in. So that's where, like, and you can nitpick this where maybe a righty should have come in to face Giancarlo Stanton at that point. Little had faced more than the minimum. It's lefty on righty. Now, Giancarlo Stanton hasn't looked particularly good since he's come back off the IL. So maybe you're okay with that. Brendan Little's been so good. Giancarlo Stanton will expand the zone a little bit. So I get it. But I wonder if that's one where if they had it back, would they have gone to a righty there? The Yankees are a hard team to make. And when we talk about the Blue Jays lineup and how you want to separate the lefties and righties and why it's important to have a threatening lefty bat somewhere in there, this is why, right? You have to work through this difficult thing where you've got Brendan Little in there and you want him for Cody Bellinger and Jazz Chisholm, certainly, but Aaron Judge is in between those guys.
Yeah.
And you want him for Ben Rice because that's a lefty on lefty and the Yankees don't have a deep bench of pinch hitting options from the right side. But you've got Giancarlo Stanton in the middle. So, like, when we talked for weeks about, do you try to split up Bichette and Guerrero at
right
the top,
on,
or Bichette, Guerrero, Springer, Kirk, and when Santander was in there, and Santander's a switch hitter, but he wasn't hitting well.
Right.
Even in past years, when it was Springer, Bichette, Guerrero as an order, this is why. It's those guys are always going to be difficult to pitch to, no matter what. But if you can put in a manager's head any lever you pull, there is going to be a counter thing to think about. That's where managing the game gets, especially in a playoff style game, 100%. Gets way more difficult. So I didn't like the one as much that pushed a guy into runner in scoring position that early. If you weren't going to make the move then to bring in a righty against Giancarlo Stanton, I understand it. It wasn't what I would have done. And then the other one is, yeah, you've got a pitcher on the mound that is a couple pitchers on the mound that are a little homer prone.
Yeah.
Intentionally walk Aaron Judge if you've got first base open.
Yeah, I didn't mind either of them, to be honest with you. One, because I think that Judge has given us enough data to warrant that level of respect.
Yeah.
And two, because Giancarlo Stanton chases. That is what he does. He will swing, and when you have a guy with a whiff rate as high as Brendan Little, then maybe sort of it's kind of justified. And I know that the pitch that he singled on was a knuckle curve that just didn't break enough.
Yeah.
Right?
Just kind of stayed in there.
Maybe it is one of those where you kind of just concede a run. You kind of just concede that at bat. One, because it didn't seem like Ariel Rodriguez was available yesterday.
No, don't think so.
And two, because you are very much managing your bullpen for this game as well as for the rest of the series, right? So you have to make those tough choices. And it's similar to, you know, the Yankees playing the infield back with Vladimir Guerrero Jr. At bat and the bases loaded, I believe, when he
grounded
hit the two-run
single. Yeah. Oh, grounded out.
Yeah, yeah. He hit an RBI ground out there that was basically the Yankees sort of conceding a run.
Yeah,
to get
the RBI ground out was runner only on third.
A runner on
third. That was the Ernie Clement had kind of moved around. The bases loaded was the two-run single.
Yeah, so that was a moment in which I think it was one out at that point. You concede that run and you get the out at first base, kind of best case scenario for both sides. So you are going to have to make those concessions, and part of it is going to be, you know, intentionally walking Aaron Judge in very unconventional situations to set up certain matchups, while also keeping an eye on bullpen load management, making sure that everyone is ready to go, because this is a long series. The Blue Jays don't have an off day until the 10th now, I believe, and this is already a big stretch entering this series. A lot to consider, Blake, and at the end of the day, maybe, yeah, you get Jazz Chisholm to beat you if that is the case, which he did. I mean, he's been having a really, really good period here as well.
I love Jazz Chisholm.
Me too.
I don't want to tip my hat to any Yankees. And Jason Dominguez had a good game after Keith kind of set the stage of, like, he's not even getting playing time anymore. I just trade him away in my, like, long-term fantasy keeper league too. Not that anyone cares about anyone's fantasy team, but I just, like, you feel emotionally invested in
a
guy.
I care about your fantasy
after
team.
That.
I don't have my own, so maybe that's why I care about yours.
Yeah. It didn't come up. I'm surprised it didn't come up with Eno yesterday, actually.
Oh, yeah. I think you did sneak in one.
Well, I snuck it in about, like, fantasy topics, but you know when I play in a league together, I played in a league together for a long time, and Eno's, like, the early 2000s Yankees in that league. Like, everyone is like, if we could knock Eno off the top spot, because he's Eno's ours, like, of course he's going to be really dominant. So it's a double format one where there's a rotisserie, and this won't mean anything to you as a non-player, but there's a rotisserie component and a head-to-head component, and we made sure he didn't win head-to-head last year. He didn't make the finals in that one, but I got to catch him in Roto right now. So anyway, we will not keep an eye on that unless Eno Saras comes back on the show at some point. There was a text line question for Daryl and Branford yesterday that I'm just going to add in here because I forgot to get to it. Why do pitchers not throw a slider at or way inside to a batter and then have it break into the zone rather than start middle and end up down and away? The answer to that one is because they want it down and away. You want it out of the zone. You want a guy, if it starts, you know, in at a batter and comes into the plate, that's going to be in a batter's bat path. That's going to be easier for them to reach. They're going to make, when we talk about like a hung slider or a hung curveball, that's kind of what it looks like. It goes, you know, inside on the batter to inside in the zone. And then that's right where the batter's swinging if he identifies it well. If you start at middle and it tails away, you're generally not throwing your breaking balls in most counts anyway to try to steal called strikes. You are trying to get a batter to expand his zone, swing and miss at it over top of it or away from it or whatever. So that is the intention of it. You'll see guys sometimes throw one of those in a certain count, particularly veteran guys love to try to sneak an OO curveball or slider in there. But generally what you are trying to do is, like we see with, say, Brendan Little and that knuckle curve, you want a guy thinking it's coming middle, and then the way the pitch breaks, oh no, it's down and away. You don't want a guy thinking, oh, this might hit me at stolen called strike, because if that guy guesses right, that's right in the bat path and you're going to hit that 400 million feet. I mean, the Jazz Chisholm one, a great example.
Exactly.
Where, you know, Max Scherzer's curveball was really, really good yesterday, ducking out of the zone. But the Jazz Chisholm one was a slider that just kind of, like, it just had, like, a little bit of downward movement, and it didn't kind of break the way you'd hope. And, it's out of here.
As middle as it can get.
Middle with, like, not a lot of movement on it either. So it's like, it's one thing if it was like this 12-6 curve, this big, like, peak Kershaw spike curve or something like that. That's one thing, but that one. So that's kind of why, to give you an example, you want guys expanding the zone on those. We have some other text line stuff left over, but we only got a minute left in the show, so we'll save those for another day. Other than Robert and Ajax said, need to promote the movement for Alejandro Kirk for the All-Star game. We need to win over Cal Raleigh.
Oh, the after, Blue Jays are all over it.
Yes, after all the terrorizing Cal Raleigh's done. Cal Raleigh, by the way, has the third most home runs ever by the end of June.
Yeah.
Ever. Not for a catcher.
He will be
not
the
for a
starting
switch hitter,
catcher.
Ever. 33 home runs already. I don't know that Alejandro Kirk's going to win that battle. I'm fairly confident Alejandro Kirk will be
an all-star.
Good luck to him as he tries to beat Cal Raleigh, having literally the best power hitting season that wasn't Aaron Judge or Barry Bonds in recent vintage. Pretty ridiculous stuff from him. Sorry we didn't get Jaron Watts-Brown today. We'll try to reschedule with him at some point. We'll be back for a full 2 hours tomorrow. Like I said off the top, this is only a 1 hour show today. The Fan Hockey Show will be with you 11 to 1. Real Kipper and Bourne with you 1 to 3. Make sure you check out the JD Bunkus podcast, both from earlier and from last night. Some really good stuff on Mitch Marner with him and Sam McKee. Blair and Barker will be with you following the game on Sportsnet Plus, on 360, all those places, with Jay's Talk after the game. So once the game ends, it's business as usual. It's a 3:07 start. It's Max Fried against Kevin Gausman. Should be a lot of fun. Thanks to Nick Blackmore, Jake Scholes, Jennifer Rolnick behind the glass. Hope you all have a wonderful Canada Day.